Hey, Sox fans, welcome back. This is Hot Takes and Heaters. This is the MLB-centric podcast under the Future Sox umbrella. I am Nick Morawski. He is Danny Miller. Our Chicago White Sox, they were rained out here on this Tuesday, April 15th. Got a doubleheader on the 16th on Wednesday. We'll push that Jonathan Cannon start, I believe, to one more day. Sox off to a historically bad start. We're going to get into some of that. Tommy Pham, Nick Nastrini, who looked pretty good on Monday. What is going on with the offense, lack thereof? Who's to blame? We'll talk a little Pedro Grifol because we love doing that. So much more. Jump on in the comments. Bring us all your good, bad, ugly. We love it. Chopping it up here. On Hot Takes and Heater. Danny Miller, good to talk to you, buddy.
Yeah, it's good to be here. It's this Tuesday night. You know, unfortunately, we do not get a White Sox game. So the Tuesday winning streak is officially over.
Was it at one game? Was it one day for us?
No, it was two. We've got two wins.
Yeah.
We got to come in during the ninth inning a couple weeks ago to
see Kopech game. Sure.
Close it out. And then last week we were privileged enough to come on a little bit after a White Sox winner. And, you know, I've been kind of talking to some folks throughout the week here. By the way, welcome back.
Thank you.
We missed you while you were gone last week. Elijah did a very nice job of filling in for you, but Elijah and I were talking a little bit. I can't remember if it was before, during, or after the show about an appearance from one of my
that'll happen. Dogs. That'll happen. But,
So we were talking about how, you know, if White Sox keep winning on Tuesdays, I might have to try to talk you into doing more shows throughout the week. We might be the catalyst.
You think that's the reason? You think that's the reason?
Absolutely not.
74, Mr. 74.
Hey, man, I got to try whatever I can to push that number, right? But anywho, it's good to be back. It's good to be back here with you. The White Sox will not lose today, so there is that.
That's true. How are you feeling, Danny? Because you gave us all the update on the surgery, and how's the rehab going with the knee?
It's going well. I had surgery last Thursday, this past Thursday, so about 5 days ago-ish. You know, the first couple of days were rough, as to be expected, but I'm healing up quite nicely. I've spent the better part of today on it, trying to, you know, just get some things done around here and getting to the point where I cannot stand to stare at the same four walls for too much longer. So, I found a reason to go to the local gas station here in Burbank and get myself a cup of coffee, not once but twice, even though we have coffee in the house, but it was a good enough excuse to get out and do something. But yeah, man, healing up nicely. Even thought about possibly going to see the doubleheader tomorrow, just because I'd like to be able to say I was there for Jonathan Cannon's first start. But you know,
what excites you about that, Danny, the Jonathan Cannon start? What gets your juices flowing?
Honestly, it's just about seeing some new blood come up through the system, a guy who's regarded as possibly being a part of the rotation in the future. You know, he's had a pretty slick rise through the farm system. You know, he's not one of these guys that's going to sit down there and it take 4 or 5, 6 years to develop and marinate, if you will. But you know, he's got some pretty good stuff. Hasn't spent a lot of time in AAA, you know, just a couple weeks at the end of the year last year. And then, you know, of course, to start the season this year. But, you know, just looking forward to something new, to get some new blood up. You know, I know a lot of people will say, well, development this and development that, and the White Sox can't develop. But pitching is one of those places they do. And I think the talent evaluation has been better within the organization. And, you know, just getting an opportunity to be able to say that I was there for this guy's first win.
Yeah, that was, well, I mean, that, you know, that was something that I like doing, you know, 2017, 18, 19, maybe even, you know, 2021, I'm trying to think. There were guys that were making their first, you know, at least their first Southside appearance. You know, they might have started their career on the road, but you got to be there for their first home game. And You know, I shared a memory, you know, just on Twitter X about being there for Moncada's first game, you know, when he was rumored to be called up. You know, I had tickets actually for that game, so it just worked out. And the anticipation for that guy, you know, working the count to get a walk and getting a standing ovation, you know, from that, believe it or not. And, you know, here we are not knowing what his future's like, if we're ever going to see him really play at the level. In the small sample sizes that we've gotten to see, will he ever do that again for us on the south side? That's to be determined. But
well, if you were to believe Cannon, anything that Chris Getz says,
no, I know, don't.
We might see Moncada back, but
sure,
it's the White Sox.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't read into that too much. So we got a question though about Cannon's, you know, pitch mix here. Are you familiar? Can you speak logically on what you might get? What kind of arsenal Cannon has?
Not a whole lot, to be honest with you. I know that he worked on developing some new pitches, a lot like Nastrini talked about yesterday, where he worked on some new grips, trying to dial some things in. I think the other guys at Future Sox would probably be the ones to be able to really kind of delve into that. But the main thing that I know is that he kind of worked on command issues a little bit in the offseason, just being able to kind of get the right shape on some of his pitches. Not that he necessarily, you know, doesn't hit the zone, but he wants to be able to really kind of refine some of those pitches. And I think, you know, obviously the fact that he's even up here, you know, and getting ready to have his first start with the White Sox tomorrow is kind of a testament to him being able to do some of those things.
Ian jumped in, can throw 9 pitches, but he pared down to 4 fastball, changeup, slider, and so, and Drew had mentioned here that,
yeah,
and cutter, yeah, that MLB Pipeline says that he has 6 pitches but uses 4. So, you know, here on Hot Takes and Heaters, you know, we try to, you know, really keep it White Sox centric with what's happening, you know, with our big league club. But you know, when you've got these young guys that are coming up that are pushing the envelope, that through injuries and through other issues, you know, it's just going to happen this season. It's absolutely going to happen. We're going to see these younger guys. So we have to kind of talk a little farm system. Now, you know, I want to get to all the, you know, the nasty stuff and the bad stuff, because there's a lot of it, and, you know, we'll get to some other things, but Monday, you know, Sox lost again to the Royals. I think the Sox are now 1-10 in the AL Central, Danny, the division that they coveted back in the fall. That has been something that they were glad to be in, from Jerry Reinsdorf's lips to Chris Getz's mind. It shouldn't be a difficult turnaround, because, you know, we're in the Central. I even remember, I think it was Dan Plesac for MLB Network, who, you know, is a Sox fan and probably buddies with Reinsdorf or something, kind of hamming it up, saying, hey, 2024, I mean, you know, look at their division, you know, between them and the Twins. They're the two teams that have money. They should be right up there in the top of the division. So, again, jokes and all that fun stuff. And the reality sets in, because Sox fans that have been following this team, they know, they've been watching what's been happening this offseason. But Monday, we got to see Nick Nastrini, and his family was there on the south side, and he looked really sharp. I mean, I wouldn't say it was a bad outing at all. I mean, 5 innings, 3 hits, 2 earned runs, a couple of walks, 5 strikeouts, gave up a home run, 48 of his 74 pitches for strikes. Really liked his changeup, Danny, dancing around in movement. He showed a lot of poise against a first place Kansas City Royals team.
Yeah. You know, first off, let me say, you bring up the family being there. I love, you know, I know a lot of folks are like, I'm here to watch baseball, but you know, over the years of being able to do what we do here, do these podcasts and be part of a team like Future Sox and like, you know, White Sox Daily in the past, we've kind of come to develop some relationships with players and their families. And I mean, I love nothing more than to watch, you know, moms, dads, brothers, sisters, girlfriends cheer their guys on, and to see Mason Adams' mom absolutely go nuts on his first strikeout in the second inning against Whit Merrifield, by the way, who's mm-hmm. Not Whit Merrifield.
Bobby Witt Jr.
Bobby Witt. Thank you. God, it was the Witt was in there.
The Witt was in there. I love it. Yeah.
So, I'm being told to bump my mic up a little bit here, so I'm going to go ahead and do that. Oh, put the mic nearer to my blowhole. I appreciate that. How's that sound? Is that better? I do hear myself.
You sound robust.
Yeah. Why? Thank you, sir. Not as robust as you. You have the golden pipes over there.
Oh, I appreciate that.
But anywho, I enjoy watching. You know, we don't have a lot to look forward to with these White Sox teams right now.
We don't. So
I enjoy seeing the joy from the family members there, and to see his mom jump up after that strikeout, it was pretty awesome. Like I said, we spent some time kind of talking with some of the family members. Mason Adams' mom has got to be probably my favorite. Brenda Adams is it's obvious she loves her kid. You know what I mean?
Right.
She's his biggest cheerleader. So in those moments, it's just cool. But as far as his pitching performance went, he didn't really miss a whole lot. There might have been a couple of times. And when he did miss, he was still getting swing and miss. I mean, he had elite swing and miss yesterday. I'd like to see the swords mm-hmm. number that he had yesterday, but
the home run he gave up though was middle. That thing had really no movement. That thing just got crushed.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to happen, especially early in the season. And for a guy to come out in his first MLB start, I'd say that the fact that it didn't happen more often. I see Blank Names is talking about Mason Adams. I was just bringing up that Mason Adams' mom is one of my favorite family member follows, by the way. I do know Nastrini. Did I say Adams yesterday? Maybe I got stuck on that. I don't know. Anyways, Nastrini, his mom was going nuts last night. But thanks for the clarification there, guys in the chat. I appreciate that.
They're paying attention, Danny. They're watching everything, not just your cigarette intake, but the things that you say.
If you noticed, I started the show with I had a lot going on before we sat down, so I was like, oh my god.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to make sure I even make it in, but
I'm
gonna try a new strategy tonight, and I'm gonna go ahead and fire that up. We'll see how long we get to.
If we get
to a topic that gets me going on this.
If you're looking for more things to do, Danny, just as you're recovering, maybe like a just kind of a cigarettes and gas station coffee podcast or something, just kind of living the life out there and, what's to do maybe in surgery recovery. I just would love just kind of for you to just wax on about what's been happening with you as you are just kind of immobile.
Yeah, cigarettes and coffee podcast. Let me just go ahead and do a podcast on what not to do when you're trying to lower your blood pressure, right? So,
and factor in the White Sox. And
that's why I've got the fat heater tonight.
There you are.
And I'm gonna try to go ahead. I'm gonna go ahead and spark that bad boy up right now.
Well, you can spark it up, and we could transition to Tommy Pham if you want.
However you want to do it. Do you have any thoughts on?
Nick
Destrini start last night, since I'm, finally getting his name right.
Here's a guy that I've been kind of looking forward to see. I've talked to a lot of people before the season that I had a feeling this was going to be a wash. I didn't think they were going to be going many places. I didn't think it was going to be as bad at all as it is right now. But a guy like Nastrini, a leisure who pitched in the game as well. It was good to see him and what he has been doing this year. That's exciting. So I liked his changeup. I liked the movement that he had. I liked his command again against a team that's in first place right now, whether they hang around and stick around, but any time you're having your debut, there are going to be butterflies. There's a lot going on. It doesn't have to be necessarily struggling against a first place team. It could be a last place team. It could be, but I liked what I saw, and it's again, confidence to build off of, that we talk about that going way back to spring training, Danny, with Crochet's first outing, or maybe it was his second outing against the Dodgers. Again, spring training, but that's a tough Dodgers lineup. Crochet did very well for himself, and I thought that was going to be a good building block onto his future outing. So a good start for Nastrini, and unfortunately a loss, but it was kind of a Jose Quintana type of outing. You know, didn't go terribly deep in the game, but, you know, five innings is kind of what you're going to get from starters these days, unfortunately. I'd love like six. Seven is, man, getting greedy, but zero offense, you know. And how about this? The White Sox have hit one home run, Danny, in the last nine games. One home run in the last nine games. They have hit three in the last 13. You know, the offensive numbers are just bottom of the barrel in all of MLB. The amount of times they've been shut out. And what I think troubles me so much is that the things that they were supposed to do, you know, get on base, take extra bases, play fundamentally sound. You know, they built this team of like scrappy gamers, TW guys, guys that maybe are in a mirror image of Chris Getz, or guys that maybe Chris Getz and Pedro Grifol put their heads together in the offseason and said, this is the type of team we want. You know, fast. Obviously, not just the acronym, but literally, you know, fast. We want speed. We want guys that can play good baseball, defense for sure. And all of that has been really failing, you know. So that's what, hey, I knew you weren't going to, you know, outscore teams. And I know you weren't going to crush teams and just power your way through with home runs and such. But at least do what you said you were going to do. At least do with, you know, how you were built. And they're not even doing that. It's going horribly wrong.
Well, I mean, when you say things like, you know, there's, you know, they sat down together in the offseason and said, this is the kind of team we want to build. I mean, that's what they told us, right? That's what they told us in the offseason, that we're going to get better defensively. And I think I even remember Bannister saying that, you know, he thinks that these are the types of moves that can get you 15 more wins just by pitching and defense alone, without adding more offense. And, you know, it's not the same line of Rick Hahn rhetoric, lawyer speak, but they're selling a product that just does not look good. And I think they probably knew that, just as most of us did. You know, again, you can throw that 74 number that I threw out there at me all day long. I expect it. It has not
stopped. Steve Stone was at 71. So,
right. So, and who knows, maybe as some of these hungry young kids come up,
stop it. Stop. You're going to try to double down on your 74, and I'm not going to let you right now.
Okay. I'll tell you what. Since tonight was a rain out, I'm gonna go ahead and say that this Tuesday game does not count. So tomorrow, if we get a win, if we get a W tomorrow in the first game, okay, or whichever game it is that Jonathan Cannon pitches starts, you and I are gonna have to do 3 to 4 shows a week. Right? Just saying that, you know, we're gonna call this a push on tonight's postponement, but.
Yeah,
I'm going to get that number up to 74 one way or another. If I got to go out there and if I got to do the streak thing and get myself banned from the stadium to, you know, either burn some eyeballs out to make people not want to see that ever again and maybe play some decent baseball so I don't have to go out on the field and entertain the fans better than the team
games world. Right now, because you've got you got friends that you want to see because it's just something that you do. You want to show your kids maybe, or you just want to be there. You just like going to the ballpark and seeing it, just, I don't know, being in that atmosphere, watching live baseball. You know, people will talk about, you know, how can anybody give Jerry, you know, a dime to watch this team? I mean, you're not going
fan shaming is awful.
Well, yeah. I mean, everybody's got, you know, an angle and everybody's going to completely, you know, question your fandom and tell you how to fan and you're doing this wrong and you shouldn't do that. It's like, hey, if you want to go to the game, go ahead. Absolutely go ahead. I get it. Like, there's a lot of I don't want to say history, but like there's a lot of tradition with a lot of people. Baseball's back and this is their team and they want to go see them and this, that, and the other. nobody's going there expecting a competitive baseball. And that's what the sad thing is. And, you know, you probably saw AJ Pierzynski's rant on his thing, Foul Territory, and he went off and a lot of different corrections.
He said some decent things. There was a couple of things in there that might not have been completely accurate, but I mean, he was at least, throwing the sentiment of a big chunk of the fan base out there.
But what I liked that he, one of the things that I liked that he said is, you know, just come out and say you're going to suck at the beginning of this. Just, and he kind of said, like, and the fans would say, okay, fine. And I don't know if that's exactly true. I think there would still be a lot of pushback, and there would probably be problems with, you know, season tickets and all that other kind of stuff. But at least be honest, just be upfront. Like, this is going to be a painful year. You know, we're trying to rewrite a lot what was done. We've got a plan. You don't have to give me years or how many years we're looking. You don't have to give me the house analogy that Steve Stone has used, but just be upfront. And I think you'll find that, yeah, we all saw what happened. We get it. It was a complete failure. The rebuild failed. You need to go in a different direction. Don't tell me you're going to be able to somehow be competitive in 2024. Are you going to sell me on Shoemake and Lopez and, this Pilar and this team that they've cobbled together with a starting rotation that has very little track record in MLB, a porous bullpen. And now you add all these injuries, which aren't terribly surprising because they're the same culprits year after year. Don't sell me on that. Just come out and say it. Fans, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be rough.
Here's the thing. I don't know. I'm sure, as a matter of fact, I know there are some people in the chat right now that saw a little bit of a rant that happened between me and another guy last night. And I mean, this dude was like hell bent on trying to make me feel ridiculous. Now
on social media and the old Twitter X.
I didn't see that. Just happened to, you know, I made a little joke comment about, you know, something completely unrelated. And this guy decided to jump in and say, hey, I hope all the fans do their job and just stop showing up and stop giving this dude a dime. Yada, yada, yada. And I said, you know what? Basically, my response, because I can't stand the fan shaming. I get where your head's at, dude. Don't get me wrong. And I understand that this is not something most people want to watch. But like you said, you want to go to the game? Go to the game. I don't believe that the attendance is going to change the way this organization operates all
people
that much.
If you were dead last, you know, they could think for themselves. Like, if they don't want to go to the game, I think honestly you're going to see more than the other side of that. You're going to see more people staying at home, being away from it, not wanting to spend money.
That's their
choice. You know, it's like, if you want to go, I get it. I'll be at some games this season. Absolutely. I'll take my kid. I'm not going to deny him an experience of some baseball that I love, that my family loves, like this. And I shouldn't say the actual baseball, but, you know, the organization, the entity that is the Chicago White Sox, that's in our blood. And we'll go experience that, you know, a couple times this summer. But, you know, I can't tell somebody you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. But if you want to, if you want to revolt, you know, if you want to, you know, chant, and that's the other thing. Why are you chanting sell the team? He's not going to sell the team. You know, don't you know all the tax laws in Illinois and everything? There's no way he's going to ever want to sell the team. You're wasting your time. I don't necessarily think it's verbatim, literally sell the team. Now, I think a lot of people do feel that way, but I think to me, though, as a fan, the sell the team is more of you're a moron. You run this team incorrectly. You know, you talk about doing right by the fans, but that's like way low on your priority list. You know, you're a liar. You have different priorities than you say. You are not invested in building a winning team. You know, you'd rather go try to get a new stadium instead of build an actual winning team, you know, the way you should be doing it. You're lazy. Instead of going out to find the best general manager you possibly could, get the best organization in terms of the front office, you're lazy. And you just brought in Chris Getz, you know, and he's lazy by keeping Pedro Grifol around. The sell the team stuff, I think, is more of just, yeah, exactly. It's just more of just a venting of, you know, you're doing it so wrong, and it starts at you. It starts at the top.
It absolutely does. 100%. And like I said, I understand the sentiment behind that kind of that train of thought. I get that 100% wholeheartedly. I get that people are like, hey, you know what? Stop putting money in this guy's pocket because he obviously doesn't seem to care because he runs things so atrociously. But the thing is you know what? My couple of dollars isn't going to make a drop in this guy's piggy bank. You know what I'm saying? If I decide to go. Now, when I was having this conversation, I was sitting comfortably in my yard watching the game. I'm not even at the game, right? Right. I'm just tired of people shaming other fans for going out to the ballpark. And then, you know, as Ian pointed out in the chat, this dude called me a coward. Well, I'm a coward for saying people should be able to spend their money however they want. And if this dude was like, you know, hey, you should stand for something for once in your life. Well, first of all, you know me zero, number one. Number two, if this is the one thing in your life that you're taking a stand on, you should probably reevaluate your life.
And I don't think you should be sitting there analyzing where somebody takes their stances or not. For all they know, like, you've made other decisions that you've got principles on, like, you know, how far or how little you want to pay attention to the Sox team, maybe monetarily or maybe time-wise, you know, throughout your week, weekends, and into the summer. You maybe have already made those decisions. You know, this is what's, you know, gets aggravating, especially as this team completely unravels, is like you start getting a lot of finger pointing within fans. Like, there's these different cliques, these different pockets. And, you know, if someone wants to go, great. If someone doesn't, I get it too. You know, I've gone down my, you know, rabbit hole with season tickets, and just, that's just I can't voluntarily, almost blindly, just give you money, a lot of money, for a product that I don't see you improving in. Now, right. I'll still go to a few games, you know, because that's what I like to do. That's my team. But I can't make the big financial investment like I was making. And to me, it's like, sure, it's great to see people, friends at the ballpark, connect. I could go find that other ways. I could connect with them other ways, and it doesn't have to be a hangout at the ballpark. So well, that's just for me personally.
You know, some of us, like you said, baseball is a large part of us since we were children, and to not go to a ball game just isn't in our vocabulary. Like you said, you know, okay, maybe I'm not going to spend money on season tickets. Maybe I'm not going to eat the ballpark food and spend a bunch of money on drinks, which I know you've gone dry here.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Good for you. You know, but a lot of folks will go out there and say, you know what, I'll pregame and I'll make sure, sure, I fill my belly before I go, but I'm going to go catch a ball game because it's part of who I am. And, you know, the thing is diehard Sox fans, a lot of folks are like, you know what? I'm not going to go drive to Milwaukee to catch a Brewers game. I'm not going to go to a Cubs game for sure, a lot of folks would say. You know, some folks don't care. I'm not a hater. I don't care. Do what you want to do. But the thing is don't tell me don't go to the ballpark. Don't spend your money. I don't really care what you think. And I honestly don't think that if the attendance is going to change anything, whether it's, you know, they're 23rd or 24th, and attendance are all the way down at the bottom and number 30 in the league. I really honestly don't think the way it changes anything on how Jerry operates, because the thought process to some of these people is, well, if we make them dead last, one, he's either going to go broke, not going to happen, or two, they're going to, you know, forcibly change the organization to go in a different direction. And that also is not going to happen with lack of attendance. It's just not going to.
In Chicago, you know, it's like, how could you even entertain taking a team out of Chicago? I get that there are two teams in Chicago, but we've been dealing with this for over 120 years. I mean, it's Chicago. That's what you can't, it's just tough to sometimes wrap my brain around, like, the other markets outside, because you're so associated with Chicago, whether you live it or in the Chicagoland area. I mean, there are some small markets, and you really think you're going to take a team out of Chicago and try to reproduce or try to make some magic happen? I don't know. I think a lot of cities, I can't speak for them, but I would think a Nashville wants something organic. Like, we want our own team. We want to start our own kind of franchise. And that might be the case for other cities. I'm not sure.
I'll tell you, I heard from a little birdie, and I don't know how true this is, but I heard from a little birdie that when Jerry was in Nashville, Nashville definitely wants a baseball team somewhere in their future. But somebody told me that they have no want or desire to have a Jerry Reinsdorf-led baseball team in Nashville.
That's telling. Yeah. Well, good on them. It's frustrating. I think you're going to have, obviously, the diehards, the ones that, you know, they're always going to go. You know, they're just always going to go throughout the summer. I think what you would lose with how bad this team is, you're going to lose maybe a lot of the walk-ups. You're going to lose the ones that get caught up in the hysteria. You know, when a team gets good, the casual fan, and I'm not trying to, like, you know, nitpick anybody's fandom or whatever, but, you know, it happened with the Blackhawks. It's happened when, you know, the Bulls have had their stints here and there, few and far between since Jordan left, you know, where a team gets hot. You know, there's just a craze. We're all talking about it. And you're just, yeah, I want to check in on what's going on with this team. I want to right. see these superstars. I want to see this magic that's happening. There's going to be none of that. So you're going to lose a lot of that. Just, hey, I was wondering what to do this weekend. And, you know, I think, you know, they're in town. Like, let's go. You know, it's a nice weekend. That's where you're going to really see it.
Yeah. That has nothing to do with, you know, being a Chicago fan or a White Sox fan. That's just general hysteria, right?
That's humanity in sports. That's social.
Right.
That's,
any sports team that is successful society. And sees an increased run of success is going to see an increased number of fans and attendance and, you know, memorabilia sales and the whole nine yards. So, some folks will say, well, White Sox fans are smart for not going to a game when, you know, the product isn't that great. And that's why attendance is down. And, you know, others will say, well, you know, White Sox fans just suck. And you know what? I don't really care what the reasoning is. I'm just not going to tell people how to spend their money.
I used to get into those heated arguments back and forth, especially with Cub fans. That wasted a lot of my 20s. Just getting in heated battles in person, whatever. I mean, social media wasn't around, so it was a lot of in person at bars and at games, and it was bad, you know. And it's just like it's two brick walls trying to yell at each other. Nothing was getting done. it's you have your beliefs, I have mine, and we're not really going to do any change here. And online, you know, on Twitter X or wherever, it's tough, man. It's tough to have those conversations where you find any respectful common ground. It's rare. You know, there's just a lot of people slinging things out knowing that they can do that because there's no consequences. Speaking of consequences, this Sox team, 2-14, I think minus 53 run diff. I mean, a lot of these numbers on base percentage, runs scored, all this stuff, lowest, you know, you're going to find in all of baseball, not just the American League. Worst start in franchise history. There was a big team meeting, Danny, before Monday's game. You know, big team meeting, closed door. Nothing came of it, especially offensively. Sox lost again. Tommy Pham has been brought into the mix now. I think he's going to be, what, signed a minor league deal? Is that what it is? I think he's got some relation with...
Yeah, $3 million minor league deal.
A relation with Barfield from, you know, Arizona.
Right.
His numbers don't jump off. I don't really see what the need is. Like, where is it, just all these injuries? You don't want to take a shot on any youngsters. Obviously Colas has been kicked around so many times. He doesn't know where he's at. But you know, here he is. We'll see what we get out of Tommy Pham. But I guess I want to come to and get your thoughts on this, because I saw a lot of this from other Sox fans recently, and it all comes around with Pedro Grifol. I've given Pedro Grifol such a difficult time. I don't think he was ever the right hire at the beginning. And as more things have been figured out and who really made that hiring and, you know, how that came to be. And I struggle to listen to him. It's comical, his printed quotes. I use them quite frequently on Good Guys Talk Back on Sunday nights as others kick him around. And he hasn't shown me anything at all, anything different from what we were seeing last year. And last year, well, he got dealt a team that maybe he just couldn't manage. Too many veterans. He expected something different. He just didn't know how to get it back on the rails. Okay, he's going to put this new thing in place, working with Getz closely. We'll get the type of team that we think that I can maybe manage and the style of play I want. And, I'll be able to command things a little bit more in terms of leadership. And I just haven't seen the little stuff, just sloppy baseball, mental lapses, all that kind of thing. So the fire Grifol stuff, is what I ultimately want to get at. Now, I understand that firing Pedro Grifol is not going to immediately produce win. It might not affect the wins and losses very much. My thing is this: if you seriously, as an organization, look yourself in a mirror, and why start now, right? That's the big kind of like, why would they really look at themselves now and be honest? But if Chris Getz has a conversation with Reinsdorf and they say, look, Grifol's not the long-term guy. He's not the guy that we really want in place. We're not really sure who that is, but we know it's not Grifol. And if he's doing more harm than good, which I feel that's the case, then get him out of here. Just get him out of here, cut the fat, get rid of the dead weight, and let Montoya manage and do whatever he can do. That's where I don't understand why people are like, well, why? What's the point of even firing? Nothing's going to change. If you think one little ounce of change can happen because you don't see Pedro Grifol as your future, then you got to get rid of him. I think you were muted, Danny. I'm sorry.
I was. I apologize.
Sorry about that.
But I was just saying that, 2024 is one of those years where we're talking about shuffling players all over, back and forth, whether they're ready or not. And let's see what we got in some of these youngsters, because we're not expected to win a bunch of games. Why not do the same thing with your manager? We saw the quote about, Jerry denying it now, but we saw the quote that said that, Jerry was knowingly letting him, kind of keep his job by mid 2023, because he had a fireable season at that point, but he's going to leave him on because of money constraints. Well, here's the thing. You have an MLB manager, a past MLB manager, as your bench coach right now in Charlie Montoyo, who there's a few of us out there that think he got the short end of the stick when he did get let go with a team that was on a run and wasn't really doing a whole lot before him. And what is it going to cost you if you fire Grifol now or later? If you still have to pay him, if he's got one of those contracts where it's all guaranteed, right. Yeah. You've got to pay him whether he's here or whether he's not. We're not asking you to go out and hire somebody new. Let Charlie Montoyo take over for the rest of the season. It is not killing you to get rid of this guy. So maybe that quote was, fabricated. I don't know. But the fact of the matter is I can't agree with you more, and we need to try something different. You have two wins. Today's April 16th. You have two wins. What are we doing that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And I, quite honestly, I can't see why the guy is still in the dugout. He's done nothing that he's promised. Absolutely.
We've seen changes happen with organizations when they flipped their managers. I think it was the Philadelphia Phillies just a couple of years ago. Didn't they can Joe Girardi And I can't remember who they brought in, but all of a sudden the Phillies took off. Now, the Phillies also had talent. Like, they had actual real Major League Baseball players. They were built to go, and it's like, well, what's happening with Girardi? What I'm saying is, like, however this team was supposed to play, as I said at the top of the show, I haven't even seen that. I'm not expecting home runs galore. I'm not expecting, you know, amazing pitching performances, because we don't have the horses for that. But the bare minimum that they said that they were going to do, they're not even doing that. So right. You got to really look at yourselves as an organization, which the Sox don't do well. They do not self-evaluate very well at all. They just don't want to. They're scared of it, because they know if they did, mass changes would have to occur. Jerry doesn't want to do that. Doesn't want people to tell him how things should be done. Does not want, you know, people to negate his ideas. It's his insular. It's his little mom and pop family. These people that have been around in the same positions for years and years and years. So the joke is, you know, how do you not even explore other options outside of Pedro Grifol after last year? You know, how do you say that this guy is safe? Is this truly the guy you want leading this ball club when they do maybe have the horses and they can compete? I'm shocked if that really is the answer. I just don't see it. So if there is a doubt in your mind and you're saying, look, Pedro, guy, I knew it was going to be bad, but you haven't been able to get anything going that we talked about, that we planned. I'm sorry, you're out, you know, and it's just, I know you didn't have like an all-star team. I know there's been injuries, but you can even be frank with them. You're not the future. Okay. You were kind of like here as a little placeholder. So once in anything in life, once you know what you want your future to be, you want to start putting that in place right away. You know, you just don't want to like procrastinate. So look, if you can say to yourself, he's not the guy down the road, then man, cut bait now.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is, I feel like, kind of hearkening back to things that we'd seen in the past. You know, we go back to, you know, Ricky Renteria and TLR even, where, you know, fans were calling for those guys' heads. You know, Ricky Renteria doesn't look so bad right now, right?
Oh, my goodness. But, bring him back, please.
His in-game management wasn't exactly the greatest, but the players seemed to respect him, and they went out there and they hustled every day, and they did the little things that Pedro Grifol has been telling us he's going to get going for this White Sox team that isn't happening still to this day when we're talking about fundamentals and defense. And
Renteria was a former manager. You know, he didn't have a ton of experience, but he was with the Cubs. I believe he was he a bench coach with the San Diego Padres before he was brought over to be Robin's bench coach? I mean, he was around in the managerial role before. And I get it. Pedro has held a lot of different positions with the Royals, and his resume is deep, but it just looks like he is way out of his element. And he knows, he's got to know that if he gets canned, when he gets canned, who is touching Pedro Grifol and asking him, hey, we need you to be our manager.
I mean, yeah, and that's the thing. He may end up in baseball somewhere, you know, after this stint with the White Sox, you know, at the helm here, but I don't see, there's nobody that's going to offer him a managerial position. I mean, I don't think there's anybody out there that's that crazy. And the fact that, you know, you talk about him only being a placeholder and not really having the talent. But the thing is you know, we talked about, again, going back to Tony La Russa and Ricky Renteria, we all wanted, as Sox fans, to see them get into a habit of knowing what it takes to win and getting into the right mind frame and just being,
I wanted a machine to be built, an absolute plug and chug machine.
And it's not happening right
now.
It's not. I like you.
That was my issue, Danny, with
you want to, you got to set a precedence.
La Russa was, I knew he wasn't a long-term solution. You know, I just knew it. You know, you're bringing in La Russa almost as a reactionary thing. Jerry's forcing this because he thinks, whether you believe he's trying to right a wrong or not from back in the 80s, or that's his mentality of, you know, we got to get past the hump. The only guy to do it is La Russa. Like, he's the guy, you know, that's how he thinks in that archaic way. And okay, no disrespect to La Russa's resume and everything he's done in baseball. And hey, he took the Sox in 2021 to win a division, but that's not what this team was built going into. It was not supposed to just win a division in one playoff game. Like, we were supposed to be, you know, in the pennant, in the ALCS, winning a pennant, going to the World Series, winning a World Series. So I thought, like, well, that's a little short-sighted to bring in La Russa, which probably was only going to be for a couple of years. You know, it was supposed to be a 3-year deal, and after a year and a half, for health reasons, he was out. So now you got to start this all over again and kind of get things going and get this machine with a new manager. It's like, why not do that after Renteria? If you really were going to let Renteria go, get a guy that you thought could be around for 6-7 years to really, you know, build something. That's where I had the issue.
Well, I mean, you know, you look at some of these baseball teams that have had some success over the years and how long they kept the same skipper running the team on the bench for many, many, many moons. You know, Bochy's obviously bounced around a little bit, you know, the last
Francona, I mean,
part of his year. But I mean, he spent a lot of time in one place. Terry Francona, if it wasn't for his health, probably would still be, perhaps, you know, doing his thing. And he'd been there for a long time. I mean, there's just guys out there that stay, and they have that staying power because they're good baseball guys. I'm just not sure Pedro he's not a dugout guy. I think he's more of a front office guy. I think he's probably got a good head for baseball in the right place. And sounded I don't like think he this was, is the place for him.
He was a good catching coach, Salvi Perez. It sounded like he was a second father to Salvi Perez and what he was able to do. Usually catchers make good managers.
Baseball family.
So that's that's right. He did
baseball family.
Well, he did. You know, Pedro talked about that because that's why he wasn't going to go see the solar eclipse. You know, I've got
because
that
baseball and family. Here. I mean, the quote ended there pretty much. There was a pause because baseball and family.
Yeah, it was.
What does that even mean?
I'm not going to watch it. It doesn't interest me that much. I'll watch videos of it to see what it looks like. I probably shouldn't say that because, you know, .. family and baseball. People don't believe it, but I believe it. I live it, and that's all that matters. So I don't know if he went on his own little rant that people think that he doesn't believe in family and baseball. I can't figure this guy out.
I'm too busy with my family and baseball
to
look up.
Yeah. Where you're at a pretty sweet spot. I mean, Cleveland, I think, they were in line for that full coverage or whatever you want to call it, whatever
the path of totality.
Danny, I got to apologize to you because if someone said to me, will Danny know the term full totality? I would have said no. I'll bet you money that he doesn't know that.
Thanks, man. Thanks, you know.
I love you, buddy. I love you, but I just didn't think.
I finished seventh grade, bro. Nah, I'm kidding. But I mean, I feel like everything is the path of totality for the White Sox here right lately. Now. Like totality in just lack of.
Danny, is the Andrew Benintendi contract the worst contract in White Sox history? I mean, I know that's a tough on the spot, but Pat and I tried to kick it around a little bit on Sunday. And
yeah, great show the other night, by the way.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you for jumping in. And there we go, man. You're ripping, you're bouncing, you're bebopping.
You brought up Benintendi and a freaking contract, and now I got to put the cigar down.
You know, I've had a time to think a little bit. John Danks was getting talked about in the chat on Sunday. Who? And that
I know, I'm just kidding.
What about Danks? That was a crazy contract. You give up on Burley and you throw that contract at Danks. And after coming, I think he had injury prone year, and he still got that money he got. And he definitely didn't live out that contract, I don't think.
That was tough.
I was also thinking about the Adam Dunn contract. Do you specifically know a lot of, like, because a lot of that era, you know, that Robin Ventura era, that was kind of foggy. I know Dunn had one year where he was just mashing, but for the most of that contract, I thought it was just pretty garbage.
Or maybe the second year he was here. He started out hot and it kind of fizzled at the end. But yeah, I remember that he did have, if you look at the numbers overall in the season, it wasn't terrible. But yeah, it felt like during that time there was, it was probably a 6 or 8, maybe 10 year period there where it felt like we were signing these guys from other places that could play first base and DH a little bit. You know, you could throw LaRoche in there. You get these. Tomey was really the only one that worked out, had some good seasons here until
he legend. You mean White Sox legend Jim Tomey?
Hey, listen, sorry. I mean, he was, he did most of his damage in other places in his career, mm-hmm. but he did not have a bad time here in the South.
He had some historical moments White Sox
indeed.
Uniform. Yeah.
But, you look at some of those contracts and you go, what on earth?
Keuchel, would you put Dallas Keuchel as a just a horrible contract?
Again, he didn't start off all that bad, but didn't really ever turn into the Dallas Keuchel that he was before coming here. I would kind of throw that one out there. But I mean, Benintendi, though, it's the highest contract in White Sox history.
Yeah.
And you wonder, like, okay, Rick Hahn wanted that guy 5 years ago and didn't get him. And now here we are 5 years later, and he hadn't really done anything to say he was going to be any better than he was 5 years ago when they wanted him. We're going to give him the biggest contract in White Sox history. For what? You had other guys on your team and all these other guys you could have went after.
They needed a left fielder, and I think they needed a left-handed bat, and they passed up on a couple other guys, and I thought that I thought there was a high probability it was going to be Benintendi because of the Royals connection. Pedro being, first-time manager, maybe he said, you know what, if you're looking at a guy, I'd love to get this guy in, and they were like, sure. Should we give him a ton of money? And Pedro's like, yes, give him the highest contract ever. And that's probably how that went. That kind of money probably should have been spent several times by the White Sox, under Reinsdorf. It shouldn't be alarming that that's
like maybe that. 10 years before Benintendi.
Yeah, absolutely. but he was signed, he had an injured hand, coming into that contract. And we find out that he was battling, hand injuries and stuff last year during the season. Off season, it sounded like he got right from everything we heard, stronger, bigger, ready to play. It's just, that's the thing that's puzzling, is not only was this team built for kind of this 2-14, I guess, but guys that you absolutely expected more from, Benintendi, Andrew Vaughn, you're kind of just shrugging your shoulders and you're saying, well, what are the excuses for these guys? These guys were supposed to perform and at least put up some sort of offensive numbers that we can kind of look to as guidance. And that's not even happening.
No, it's a shame that, and again, this is another thing that I see a lot of out there on the socials is, when we talk about bringing out these young guys, like we have been a little bit tonight, and I even seen it's way earlier in the chat. I'm sorry, Drew, I'm not ignoring you. I saw Drew Boggs ask, what kind of prospects we could probably see later in the season. And
well, do you want to rush guys? I mean, do you know?
Well, and he even asked, like, why won't we see Drew Thorpe or Colson Montgomery this year? And I won't say that we won't see either one of them. There's a chance we might see both of them. But you definitely don't want to push things if they don't need to be pushed. But, and I just lost my train of thought.
That's just where we're at as Sox fans, kind of going all the way back up to the Nastrini conversation, to kind of bookend things, is you don't want to force somebody. You want them to force the issue. But like, this is the year to just kind of get excited for new blood. And I was excited to see Nastrini. We're excited to see Jonathan Cannon. I'm excited. when Leisure pitches and when Crochet takes the ball. Like, this is stuff that I think are building blocks for the future. You know, there's so many one-year contracts and there's so much dead weight that's going to be gone after this year anyway. I'm looking at guys that are going to be helpful for the next
build. And that's exactly what I was getting at now that I found my train of thought was, you know, the thing that you see on the socials is fans are saying, well, we've got these young guys coming up that show some potential and promise and people are talking about them. But the White Sox won't spend in free agency to, you know, supplement those guys when the time is right to compete. Right. And, you know, I don't know that I 100% agree with that just because we talked a little bit last week about the available money that's going to be out there for the White Sox mm-hmm. next year and the amount of money coming off the books. But when you look at history and you see that Grandal and Jose Abreu in his aging waning years and Andrew Benintendi were the three largest contracts in White Sox history. And they're not even close to being competitive with what other teams are doing out there. You kind of wonder, maybe there's some truth in it. I'm not necessarily looking for the $300, $500 man, $500 million man, but I am looking for something with a track record that we can go ahead and say, you know what? Hey, we have only these two holes, like the same two holes we've been looking at for the last, I don't know, century, it feels like, when we're looking at right field and second base, when we get to that moment of competition and thinking we can actually take the Central and maybe go deep into the playoffs if we had a right fielder and a second baseman. I just don't see them. They haven't done it. They won't do it. There's this propensity.
You can't expect it.
Go out and sign the complimentary players that you need for all these young guys that are coming up. And we can talk about Mike Shirley and his drafts and talent evaluation until we're blue in the face, because I honestly think the 2022 draft looks like it could be a monster. There's a lot of names in that draft and that came off the board in that room that could be contributors to this White Sox team. But if you can't give me anything to supplement those guys, then what are we doing here, man?
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. I mean, I don't have any faith that they'll put the finishing pieces in place when the time is right, just because there is no track record that they've done it before. You know, the right pieces. I'm talking about like anchor, stud, ace, pitcher. Like, what's the premium pitcher out there? We should be in the market for it. And maybe two of them. You know,
we'll get the Zach Wheeler excuse on that.
Sure.
You know, we tried to get a premium pitcher, but he decided to go somewhere else for $5 million less because of his wife.
Yeah, you know, if we factor in all these different perks and stuff, this guy was going to be made. That's not the plan. That's not the game. You know, and so we'll see. That's all I can say is I can't buy into it like I did last time. I was really amped for that free agency, and you know, time will come, and that's what I guess we just have to kind of wait around for, and let's prove it. It's all prove it to me. Anything that the White Sox do, it's like, oh great, it's wonderful that you said that. Prove it now. Prove it, because you don't have a leg to stand on, you know, with me.
Right. So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
You know, before we close out the evening tonight.
Yeah.
You've been the one asking the questions, and usually are most weeks, but I have a question for you. We are only at two wins, and I know it's early in the season and they're on track to win like 21 or whatever, 23, whatever it is. We all know that's probably not going to happen. Right. There is going to come a point where maybe they get two or three wins in a week and we'll all be excited. And hey, are we back? We're back. Right. But Nick Morawski as a White Sox fan.
Yeah.
What are you hoping to see right now? And I know we've talked about, you know, individual accolades, but are there any specifics that you're really looking for here just in the next couple of weeks? What do you want to see as a White Sox fan?
You want my honest opinion? 100%.
Okay. This is no holds barred.
So I'm going to double down on what I said earlier. Fire Pedro Grifol. Get him out of the dugout immediately. This has been a colossal failure. Chalk that up. Somehow learn from that. You know, if you want to start in a complete different direction, you know, hey, true, that was a failure.
Have some
just transparency, you know, just be honest with the fans, get rid of him, get him out, bring in Montoya. And, you know, I want to see whatever is going to be around beyond this year. Cause I think this year is a wash, you know, they're not going to only win 23 games. Like, you know, maybe they get to 60. Well, what does it matter? It's how are they getting to those 60? How are they getting to the 50? How are they winning those?
You 74 know, after they win tomorrow and we start doing 3-4 weeks of show or three, four.
When they go on those, when they go 25 in a row and they rip that off and they march towards 74, how are they getting towards
making
that?
History,
and,
buddy.
I'd like to see more of Corey Lee. Is that weird? I don't want to see Martin Maldonado anymore. I mean, he's garbage, you know?
And, you know, I saw a lot of that in the chat tonight, people saying Maldonado's got to go. I think Trey and Clutch have kind of been on that for weeks now. Thanks, guys, by the way. Really, thank you, everybody, for the chat.
I mean,
Blank Name has been all over it tonight. Ian, Drew, all you guys. Most of our regulars that are here on top of that stuff.
It's but a Maldonado, good group. Yeah,
it is a good group. My thing about Maldonado is I don't necessarily think he's got to go. Could he be a DFA candidate later in the season? Possibly, but you know, it's been talked about on this show and a lot of other places that I think Maldonado, you know, the pitchers think highly of him. And I think he's probably a pretty good positive influence on guys like Corey Lee, you know, who are still impressionable, I guess. Maldonado's body probably isn't allowing him to do the things that he used to be good at.
Then hire him like in a Grady Sizemore type role as a baseball coach.
I can see that maybe in the future. I wouldn't be mad about it, honestly. The thing is I'm not sure I'm ready to DFA him and leave him with a sour taste in his mouth. You know, maybe Jerry can give him one of those awesome ambassadorships that he likes to hand out to guys. You'd be a White Sox forever. We're extremely loyal, and you'll never have to worry about anything ever again because the White Sox are going to pat you on the back every day.
Well, that was AJ, though, and AJ, he left. AJ
basically told him, yeah, go,
yeah,
you know, pound sand, but I digress. You know, the thing is I don't want to see him necessarily DFA'd or fired, but I don't want to see him starting even at a 50% clip at this point in time. You know, if there's an injury – you know, I would
Which
much rather
Max
see Corey Lee
Stassi, get. He's dealing with some injuries, right?
Yeah, they actually just moved him over to the 60-day to make room for tomorrow's starter, Jonathan Cannon.
Yeah,
and you know, I don't know why it took him that long to do that.
But so okay, so you keep Maldonado around for a little bit, but I don't want to see him play a bulk of the time. But
no,
I want to see
keep him on the roster. The just don't start him all the time.
I want to see Cannon. I want to see Leisure improve. You know, I want to see a good brand of baseball. But, you know, I think first and foremost, I want to see Grifol gone. Boy, if he could just get his walking papers, I would think, okay, you're getting a little bit more serious now, or at least somewhat serious.
Imagine
you're taking a small baby step into the direction of serious. As an organization.
Sorry, I'm laughing at the chat, Ian. The zingers over here. Imagine having a manager that understands the modern game and isn't sleeping. It's tough to imagine as a Sox fan right now.
Isn't it? It is.
But
it
is, so. No, I'm with you, man. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I don't think that's asking for much. You know, competent baseball, but I think they need to start being honest with themselves and honest to fans. You know, and it's just. It's not happening. He just doesn't have it at all. And I know that there's a lot of injuries, you know, and of course, and guys aren't playing up to their potential and all that other garbage, but you just know it after watching baseball for so long and seeing the ebb and flow, like you just pick it out. You just know that
right. This
isn't for this situation is not for him. So
you're absolutely right. And, you know, I don't disagree that he was given, you know, a ton of talent. He obviously was not. Although I wouldn't necessarily say that he doesn't have any, but he wasn't given an exactly spectacular roster to work with. But that, you know, anybody who has any kind of inkling of of baseball knowledge can see that some of the in-game decisions are just atrocious.
Yeah,
absolutely atrocious. Things that you little league managers wouldn't do that he's trying. And, you know, again, like when I said earlier that we're talking about the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Well, if the changes that you're trying to make to do something different go completely against any regular baseball thinking, that's not helping either.
Right.
So, you know, I don't really know. Clutch asks in the chat, what about Sheets in right field? Did we see if Pedro says that's an option? And the only answer I have for that, Clutch, is I think they're just trying to figure out how to get Sheets bat in the lineup. And that tells you a lot about what they're thinking about Andrew Vaughn. I know I saw Pedro say earlier, James Fegan put a tweet out earlier today that said, Pedro says Vaughn has really been working and he's just one click away from.
Yeah, he wasn't in the lineup today or tonight. He was going to get a day of rest
and reset.
A reset. And I did see where they were going to possibly entertain Aloy or Sheets out there just to get
rubber arm.
Yeah, I mean, Brian, it's just unfortunate. You know, I like Sheets' bat. You know, again, it's small sample sizes. I just don't see it in regularity, and I think that goes in hand with the amount of playing time or their lack thereof. It's like, how do you use Sheets? I think the Sox have not been able to figure that out because of the log jam that they've had at in similar situations, the hybrids, the first base DHs that they've tried to force into different ways because they haven't been honest with themselves in roster construction during the offseason. Right field was something you were supposed to figure out again. And I thought they kind of did, you know, Dom Fletcher. Okay. We'll see him out there. And it's been a lot of matchups out of Grifol. And now you're going to sacrifice, you know, more defense issues just so you can get that left-handed bat in the lineup that
you see, get Robbie Grossman out there to walk twice a game because he's not really hitting the cover off the ball. Right. But I mean, he's getting on base. It's nice to have a leadoff man that'll get on base every now and again. Defense isn't exactly great.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I would like to see some of these guys start to swing the bat a little bit. But, you know, we talk about Sheets and getting his bat in a lineup, and they have to put him in right field.
Right.
Find that while Andrew Vaughn struggles. I mean, give Andrew Vaughn an extended break. You know, on Sunday night show with Ian and James, they, you know, James brought up that Vaughn still has three options. Yeah. You know, I'm not opposed to sending a guy down. Obviously, this is a guy who was a number three overall draft pick for the White Sox. They're going to give him his opportunities. They're going to give him his chances. But you know what? It wouldn't be the first time that somebody who's been up for 3 years goes down to the minor leagues.
Yeah.
You know, and why are we
crazy? Again, it's crazy 2024. To think about that. Yeah.
It's 2024. We're not doing anything as a team. And when I say we, I mean the White Sox. I'm sorry. I'm one of those people that has that problem. I am not part of the White Sox organization. My opinions and views are my own.
Yeah, Drew brings up a point that, you know, he didn't even have a minor league career.
No. No, he was part of that Schaumburg taxi squad where everybody and their brother was like, this kid's got it. He's got it. So let's just fast track him.
Yeah. Well, you got a doubleheader against the Royals on Wednesday. You've got a day off on Thursday, I believe, and then they're off to Philadelphia. That's, you know, they're middle of the pack. I think they were 500 the last time I checked, kind of hanging in there in the NL East. You know, they got some horses there. That is, NL East has got some teams, that's for sure. So, I don't know, man. We play the whole game of like, well, how many more wins until the next time we talk? You know, I don't know. It's just you'll win accidentally from time to time. I think it depends on what kind of starting pitching they get. You know, I've seen now through like what the third time through, third or fourth, these starting pitchers, you know, they're just, it's starting to crumble a little bit as expected. You know, the hope was that they would kind of hang together maybe through April and May, give us a couple months. You played a lot of AL Central. You know, maybe you catch some teams off guard because they haven't seen you before. And, you know, that's kind of not the case right now. So now you're just on, you know, chewing gum, paper clips, and just cunning and guile, just trying
holding
to do anything
together, however you can.
I don't know. Yeah. But Hey, you know what? Yeah, go ahead.
What were you going to say?
I was just going to, you know, thank our folks for tuning in and start kind of saying goodbye.
You know, the chat's rolling. Do you got a couple minutes here?
Yeah.
Obviously these guys have been bringing it up in the chat. I just wanted to, and we won't spend a ton of time on this because, it's low hanging fruit. But I'm sure you saw, and I know you saw because I sent the photo to you, but the tweet I put out earlier, again, tweeted out originally by James Fagan, the White Sox schedule for today and all the optional stuff. Do you want to discuss that at all?
I looked at some of the times of it, and it was a little strange. Like the stretching was, 3 hours before a game, 2.5 hours before a game, there was an optional stretch. Like, what is happening? Like, is that something, hey, we get to the ballpark and, you can come to our team stretch and then go about your business and do whatever you're going to do baseball activity-wise, and then we're going to have another team stretch, as a lot of people see, on the field. If you're watching live, if you're there in person, right, they've got that team stretch going on. They've got trainers out there and all the big rubber bands. You and I were talking along with, Ian, just in text and stuff, just from going back to our former just playing days, high school, college, whatever it is, even a little bit beyond. I mean, there was no optional stretching ever. It was, we're all doing a team stretch, right? Like when we get off the bus, like right when we're all together. And then you had your outfielders, your pitchers, your infields, they might break up and do some other, maybe more specific stretches to whatever they're really doing. And of course the pitchers, especially the starting pitcher, was on their own kind of world. You almost didn't talk to them. They were with a pitching coach. I remember just working on my own stuff and however I needed to get prepared for the game. But the amount of optional things, like the hitting, the cages, like optional, that was alarming to me. Is that how it is in other baseball organizations? It's just shocking. Well,
and that's the thing, James, I guess it was put out there that the White Sox asked James to take that picture down. But, once it's out there, it's out there. The internet never forgets. Yeah. So whatever. But he, he put out that a follow-up tweet, like, hey, just want to basically full disclosure type of thing, like, that optional stretching is not uncommon. They do a pregame stretch, like you said, before the game starts, that we see, but
it's just not a good look for a 2-14 team.
And again, I never played it at the major league level. I'm not somebody who's going to claim to know how they do things, but played at some pretty high levels of baseball, and I never saw a schedule that even had the word optional on it. There was nothing ever posted in our locker room, our clubhouse. There was never a team meeting that said, hey, you guys can come to this if you want, but if you don't, go do whatever the hell you want to do that day. Never seen anything like that in my time. It's just shocking to me. Again, and you and I are both pitchers. I've done some work out of the pen and as a starter. My time as a starter was like you said, you spend, maybe 3-4 hours before the game. I was spending some one-on-one time with my starting catcher or maybe two-on-one, I guess, and one of the pitching staff coaches, whether it be the main pitching coach or one of the other guys. But, you kind of go through where your head's at. You're looking at the opposing lineup. You're doing all those things. I never once heard of a team that didn't have a team stretch. And there are other teams that, you might break off into your groups, like you said. I've seen it, and our teams did it. But that was usually like, hey, let's go out and throw some catch. Like, even on this thing, playing catch was an optional. Never an option for us. You either now, whether or not that means pregame or like hours before, I don't really know. This schedule is kind of a little indiscriminate. There are times down there, and whether or not there are other stretches pregame, for whatever reason, those aren't actually on this schedule. Mm-hmm. They're not pictured. So why do we need times for everything else for everybody to be out there? We don't need times for the stuff that's actually required.
Yeah, it's so just I don't know bad, how I bad buy look. That. Bad look. You know, I mean, whatever it means something doesn't mean anything. Just to see that many optional things for a 2-14 team, and the optional stuff, you know, fielding, catching, hitting, those are the things that we're failing at. So you don't want to see that.
Stretch at 245. The starting pitchers stretch at 245. For a 6:40 start.
That is odd.
4 hours before the game.
That's really odd because you're not, I mean, you are not ramping up anywhere close to that, you know, leading up to that. Maybe you're playing a little bit of light catch or you're working on some like just mechanical hitting some spots here and there. But, you know it. Once you get ramped up, it's kind of, I don't want to say dangerous, but it's difficult then to start cooling down and then having to get ramped back up again. You know, that can do serious shoulder and arm issues.
In a long inning, I've gotten up and I felt like, oh man, I'm starting to stiffen up already.
Yeah. I mean, there would be times where I'd be playing just catch during a long inning in high school or college because like I just needed to stay loose. You know, right. I mean, right. It's just so that I don't know. Look, they're a major league ball club. They claim to be they actually are a major league ball club. They're not playing like it. So if that's their schedule, it speaks volumes, but maybe there's some insight into what's actually going on there.
Yeah. Oh, and Ian says, you know, Brooks probably got in James's ear about the optics of it. Well, yeah, you know why? Because Brooks looked at it and went, what is this? You know, obviously he did put out that reactionary, oh, I'm sorry tweet. This is not uncommon for things to go down this way. But, you know, the optics are that way because it doesn't make sense, even for somebody who, like Nick and I, have been ball players. Now, whether it's uncommon or not, it might be a whole nother issue. Whether there are other things that are not posted on this schedule is another issue too. But my question to you, like I said before, is then if they're required, why are the optional things on this schedule and the things that are required not on this schedule? I would honestly think, hey, you know what? If I'm a ball player, if I'm in any workplace, shouldn't you be telling me where you absolutely need me and require me to be? Instead of, hey, this one's not, it's optional. It's not that important, right? Yeah. Does that make sense? I don't know.
It does make sense because I'm looking at it like, be clearer with just who's going where and just assigning people, like having that schedule, the how vague it is with the optional. You know, that just makes me feel of like what the off season might look like. You know, it's optional for you to take care of yourself, or it's optional for you to be following these different guidelines.
That's a great point, because even if it is, like Ian says, it's a pre-game stretch, like it's way early than the actual game stretching. I don't know a team that's had 3 hip flexor and groin injuries, a team that's had years and years and years of hamstring and back issues.
Yeah.
Why at this point is it optional? I don't give a shit. Pardon my French. If you are having another warm up before the game, if you are having another stretch before the game, at this point, you probably should be stretching as often as freaking possible.
You know that's going to be public. That little schedule is going to be public. So even if you don't follow it, don't have the word optional in there, like because you know what, somebody's going to photograph that. So have like just immense amount of stretching, like cage time for 5 hours. You know, we stretch for an hour and a half, you know, have just whatever. Just make it look like you're actually doing something. You're putting in the work, you know, even if you're not.
Yeah. I don't know. But I'm not some biomechanist.
Yeah.
I don't work in a baseball organization. I'm just some schlep who sits behind a computer with a camera in front of me and spews my most emotional thoughts out here week in and week out. I provide all the hot takes.
Yeah.
Nick's got the Sox takes. I got the hot takes. I get my emotions get the best of me, but man, I mean, I, I don't think of myself as a particularly dumb person. I might not be the smartest person on the planet, but I'm not a particularly dumb person. And this just doesn't make sense to me. It just doesn't look good.
Something's not right.
The optics don't look right.
Doesn't pass the smell test. We'll see. We'll see how things unfold for our Chicago White Sox. 74, baby. Yes, 74. As always, thank you so much, folks, joining us live. Loved all the chat. Loved the comments. Fueling the show. We appreciate it. Pass it along to other Sox fans in your life. FutureSox.net. You can find the audio absolutely everywhere you find your podcasts. And subscribe and check us out on the Future Sox YouTube channel. For Danny Meller, I am Nick Morawski. Until next time, go Sox!